Well, good morning. If we haven't had an opportunity to meet before, my name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And like Dez said just a few minutes ago, we are so incredibly excited that each and every one of you are here with us this morning. Whether you walk through those doors for the very first time and this morning you overcame all sorts of nerves and that tension to walk into this place and to give church a try again, or whether you're back for the 100th time, we know just how difficult it is week in and week out, and we count ourselves so ridiculously privileged to get to spend just a little bit of our weekend with you. You see, as we start this morning, I wanted to start with a question. Do I have any ladies in the room who were at IF yesterday? There we go. If you were here yesterday, you know that we had this incredible opportunity in which we had almost 100 women in this room investing in their lives and their stories and their futures. And yesterday was an absolutely incredible day for so many of y'all. I got to see bits and pieces along the way, but most years, IF is an opportunity for me to gain even greater appreciation for my wife and to recognize, like, you can't go anywhere. I can't do this without you, as I'm on duty with our two toddlers for the entire day. But yesterday, as we moved through the day, after everything was all said and done, and ladies, I promise I didn't look at them or anything, but there was a bucket of about 100 rocks that were left behind. And on these rocks, as the ladies moved through yesterday, on these rocks, they wrote out these things that they were leaving behind and what they're stepping into in their lives, and the ways in which God is transforming them and calling them to something bigger and something better in every single one of their stories. And you see, what you may not know around here is that we believe with all of our heart the opportunities and events like this aren't something that we invest our blood, sweat, and tears in just to get people and just to get numbers. It's because we believe with all of our hearts, while Sundays are important around here, that events like these are the events that have the ability to change our city, our neighborhood, our world. That as we as individuals take what God is speaking into our lives and what he's speaking over top of us and what he's calling us to, and we take that back into our own circles of influence, that's when things begin to change. And so, ladies, if you were a part of IF yesterday, man, can I just implore you one last time? Don't allow yesterday to just be an event. Don't allow it to be a day on the calendar where it's said and gone and in the rear view mirror. May this be an opportunity for you guys to be the catalyst to something incredible within your families, within your neighborhoods, within this city, within this world. That there is unbelievable potential that we see in each and every one of you, and it's why we invest in days like yesterday for you guys to be the world changers that God is calling you to be. This morning, we find ourselves continuing on with part three in this series that we have been in, that we've been calling Doubting God. And throughout this series, we're addressing this tension that exists in every single one of our lives and in every single one of our faith stories. This tension that all of us have bumped up against in our lives, regardless of how we walked into this room or where we find ourselves in a relationship with Jesus and the way in which we look at God. You see, for every single one of us within our lives, we've found ourselves at some point within our stories bumping into things like doubts, questions, and uncertainties as we look at God. And undoubtedly, in all lives, we find ourselves in those places, struggling with those things at the hands of circumstances or what we're witnessing in the world. Oftentimes, in the midst of our doubts, questions, and uncertainties, we find ourselves lost and sometimes confused. Lost and confused at where to go to find answers, where to go to find the truth. Lost and confused at whether or not we're even allowed to address and talk about the doubts that we have towards God or in our faith. And the reason we find ourselves so often lost in the midst of doubts and questions in our lives is because somewhere along the way, for so many of us, we've been led to believe that in the midst of those doubts, questions, and uncertainties, we have but two options. That we either, option one, assume that those doubts, questions, and uncertainties are wrong, and because they're wrong, we were made to just hide those things. That we stuff them away and we act as if they don't exist, hoping that no one ever uncovers the doubts that we have towards God or our faith. Or option number two, We assume that our doubts, questions, and uncertainties are 100% accurate. And if they are 100% accurate, then there's no other solution than for us to run from God. And yet, what if? What if this series was designed to uncover a third option? An option that we believe, if we were willing to lean into, could uncover this reality that option one and option two may not be the healthiest or the necessary option in all lives as we encounter moments of doubts, questions, and uncertainties, but that there was actually a third option that was healthier and could move us in a better direction, could set us up for a better future from this day forward, and could allow us to lean into the doubts and questions of all lives instead of acting as if they don't exist. Or as if they're right and all of those doubts, questions, and uncertainties cause us to run from our faith and cause us to run from our God. You see, as we've moved through this series, we've uncovered this foundational layer in the way in which we look at doubt, at the way in which we look at our questions, at the way in which we look at our uncertainties that allows us to begin to understand that addressing our doubts, bringing up our doubts, having discussion about our doubts, questions, and uncertainties can actually be the healthy path forward. And if you walked into this room and you've missed either of the first 2 weeks, man, I would challenge you this week as you're commuting to work or as you're preparing dinner one night to go back and to catch either of those first 2 weeks. And this is why I believe it could be so imperative and so transformational in your life and in this journey as we move through this series. Because in week number one, what we began to uncover was this, is that so often what we've been told or what the world around us makes it seem is that doubts are all bad. And there is nothing good that can come from doubts, and that doubt is actually the enemy of our faith. And yet, what if doubt could actually be the catalyst to a deeper faith? What if our doubts and questions and uncertainties were an opportunity for us to lean in, to have a conversation, a dialogue that allowed us to begin to recognize some of the filters that we bring to the table as it relates to our faith and the way in which we look at God, and move through a growth process where we can let go of the things that aren't true and hold on to the things that are true as we look at who Jesus really is? And then week number two, we continued forward by talking about this tendency within myself, most likely within you. This tendency where each and every day we bring to the table our own insecurities, our self-doubt, that as we look in the mirror, what we see is someone that we've deemed not good enough. And yet over time, as we deal with our own self-doubt, what we've recognized is that oftentimes our self-doubt seeps into every other relationship of our lives. That it isn't long before I think I'm not good enough turns into he thinks I'm not good enough. And it isn't long before that self-doubt seeps into the way in which we think God looks at us or what he believes about us. And yet, what if our own self-doubt actually had zero bearing on how God looks at us, how he loves us, and how he wants to use us? But this morning, we continue with part three of this series. And I promised you all along, I've dangled the bait out there, and we finally get to the part in which we fulfill this promise of over the course of the next 4 weeks, we're going to be diving into some of the most major doubts that we have as it pertains to our faith. These doubts that seem to rise to the surface over and over again that make it difficult for us to justify faith in a relationship with God and who God is and if he really loves us and if this thing is really real and relevant in our lives in light of some of the things that we're bumping up against in our circumstances, in our lives, or the things we're being taught by the world around us. And you see, today we address these doubts, questions, and uncertainties that rise to the surface in every single one of our stories at the hand of hurt. These doubts, questions, and uncertainties that we've had in our faith when we have encountered people who claim to be following Jesus, but when we actually enter into a relationship with them or we rub shoulders with them, what we quickly begin to experience is that the way in which they're living doesn't jive with what they're saying or who they're saying they are. That they say they're Christians, but they surely don't act like it. And for every single one of us, there have been moments in every single one of our stories, whether we find ourselves or consider ourselves Christ followers or not, in which we have encountered Christians and they've said things to us that have hurt or stung. Or we witness the way that they've interacted with that waitress or that person. And what we've quickly recognized is, I'm not so sure that I can believe in God in light of the way you're acting if you claim to be a God follower. Or maybe it hasn't even been what we've seen or experienced. The way in which we've been hurt or the way in which we've seen them hurt someone close to us. But undoubtedly, most of us have heard stories in the news of people who claim to be of high character and high faith standing, who have found themselves in their journey engaging in sexual abuse, affairs, addictions, who have found themselves engaging in financial lies. And as we come up against those stories that exist all around us and the hurt that it creates in other people's lives and in our world, we begin to do a double take on our faith. We begin to consider whether or not we can actually engage in a faith that has people like that who claim to follow Jesus. Do we really want to be considered a Jesus follower? Do we really want to walk into a church when it's full of people like that? And you see this tension that exists within our world and oftentimes within our lives, whether we are a Christ follower or not, is something that an author by the name of Brennan Manning addressed a couple of decades ago. Brennan Manning wrote an incredible book called The Ragamuffin Gospel. And within The Ragamuffin Gospel, there was this quote, a quote that hits to the heart but addresses these questions, doubts, and uncertainties that we struggle with at the hands of humanity and those that consider themselves to be Christ followers. You see, Brennan Manning wrote this. He said, the greatest single cause of atheism in the world today is Christians who acknowledge Jesus with their lips and walk out the door and deny him by their lifestyle. That is what an unbelieving world simply finds unbelievable. That there is this tension that exists at the hands of the church and those of us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers. That is, in all lives, we claim to follow Jesus and then sometimes do the exact opposite. There is this roadblock that is created between how the world sees Jesus. And what's so incredible is that a couple thousand years ago, when the God of the universe put on flesh and blood, and stepped onto the pages of history and walked in our shoes, he began to address this very issue. He began to address this issue in which the church and those people who consider themselves to be God followers were creating this roadblock full of doubts and questions and uncertainties in the minds of those who hadn't yet encountered Jesus. And we find one of those such instances in an account written by a guy named Matthew. Matthew was a dude who walked and followed Jesus around for about 3 years of his life, jotting down everything that he saw, everything that he heard Jesus say and do. And in one of these moments in which Matthew was jotting down what he was seeing Jesus doing, it was this moment in which Jesus was directly addressing the religious leaders of his day, the Pharisees. And he was addressing this issue that the Pharisees were creating in the minds and the hearts of the outcasts and the less than within the world who had questions about whether God could actually love and accept them. You see, this is what we find in the book of Matthew, chapter 23, starting in verse 27. If you haven't done so already, this is an incredible opportunity for you to grab that weekly that you were handed as you came into this room. And inside that weekly, we've created a notes page specifically for you just to help you follow along as we move through the text. If that's not your style, everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what Jesus says in his address to these religious leaders. He says, "What sorrow awaits you, teachers of the religious law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites? For you are like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled on the inside with dead people's bones and all sorts of impurity. Outwardly, you look like righteous people, but inwardly your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness. You see, in a way, only Jesus can. He goes right to the heart of the matter. He addresses it head on with an incredible amount of truth. And he says, here's the tension you're creating. That on the outside, you put on this incredible show, but on the inside, it's like you're dead. You aren't the same person that you put on display. And in a way, only Jesus can. He pulls out this word. This word that for centuries had only been used in one particular way. And Jesus uses it in such a way in this passage that it becomes relatable to everyone who is hearing him speak. See, right smack dab in the middle of this passage, Jesus pulls out this Greek word, Hippocrates. And this word, Hippocrates, was this word that had been singularly used for centuries only in relation to the Greek theater. And we see Jesus use it 17 different times within the gospel. We only see Jesus use this word throughout all of the New Testament. And yet he keeps coming back to this word. And yet in Greek culture, this is literally what they were visualizing. This is what this word Hippocrates meant. That when you would go to the Greek theater, the character that was the Hippocrates would be the character that would come out on stage and they would place a mask over their face. They would enact a scene, but then later when the scene would change, they would take that mask on and they would place another mask on and they would act out another scene. And then when the next scene came, they would take that mask off and they would place another mask on their face and act out a completely different scene. It was this act of continually changing characters based upon the scene and the crowd that was watching. And you see, what I'm willing to bet about you is that every single one of us have encountered in our lives people who are playing the Hippocrates. People who, as the scene and as the crowd changes, the mask changes. To cover up their lives and their shortcomings and their deficiencies and their mistakes. To cover up the ways in which they don't always get it right in order to look perfect to a surrounding world. And yet what Jesus was calling out in this particular passage wasn't the mistake. Jesus was calling out the cover-up. He was calling out the lack of transparency and vulnerability. Jesus knew we were broken. It was the reason that he came. That wasn't what he had issue with. What he had issue with was a group of people within the local church who were so committed to covering it up that that cover-up became a barrier to people seeing the grace and the love of Jesus on full display. You see, there was something that was taking place 2,000 years ago that was setting the stage for right here, right now, in our lives and in our world. Because what every single one of us have experienced in our lives is that when we encounter people like that, what ultimately happens is that the hurt we experience at the hands of the cover-up, at the hands of the hurt by people who claim to be Christ followers, is that that hurt seeps into our heart. And when that hurt seeps into every single one of our hearts, it always affects the way our hearts see and feel towards God. But what if simply uncovering the truth about people and reminding ourselves of the truth about humanity could actually be part of the process of protecting our heart? Could actually change or adjust the way we look at and see God from this day forward? What if knowing the truth about people could resolve some of the doubts and questions we have about God? And what if knowing the truth about humanity could actually allow us to draw this line of distinction between who humanity is and who God actually is? That no longer in our lives and in our stories, if we find ourselves in a position in which we've been hurt by the church in the present or in the past, do we have to associate the way in which humanity has hurt me is automatically the way in which God will hurt me. That because Christians have let me down, it means that God will let me down. Or maybe we equate those two directly with one another. That in the moments Christians have let me down, it means that God has let me down. And yet, what if that wasn't true? What if that wasn't the reality of what was taking place in all lives and in all stories? And what if resetting the way in which we look at each other could actually reset the way in which we look at God? What if we could begin to highlight some essential truths about us as humanity, and maybe a step deeper, could begin to highlight some specific truths for you about us as Jesus followers and us as the local church, that could give us a better understanding of each other and in turn allow us to address the questions, doubts, and uncertainties so that we could get to the bottom of a better understanding of who God really is. You see, this morning, what I want to highlight is three critical truths. Three critical truths about us as the local church, about us as Christ followers, that allow us to create this line of distinction between humanity and God as we look at our faith. The first truth is this. Is that within the local church, and for those of us who are Jesus followers, the truth of the matter is that within this place, some of us go to church, but aren't really following Jesus. You see, claiming to follow Jesus and actually living it out are two totally different things. Claiming to follow Jesus is really not that difficult of a step, but putting it into practice within all lives is much more difficult on a daily basis. And as humanity, it is ridiculously easy for us to turn a place like this or walking into a place like this into simply a check-the-box activity. Into simply a step in our lives and our faith to gain some credit for our religion. And if we just show up every once in a while and we check enough boxes by the time that we get to the end, then hopefully everything will be copacetic when our life comes to a close. And yet the reality is that oftentimes if we don't see it through that lens, see it through this lens that some people come to church, but it doesn't mean that they are actually fully following Jesus, that they've surrendered their lives to him, that they're attempting to live differently. It will ultimately impact the way that we see God. It'll impact the way that we see Jesus. And what you need to know about us around here is this, is that we believe with all of our hearts that engaging in the local church is a critical step in us following Jesus. But what we also believe is that coming to church is not the end-all be-all of following Jesus. It is a part of it. It was meant to be a catalyst for it, but it wasn't meant to be the end-all be-all. But it's so easy as humanity to equate one with the other. That if you go to church, you should automatically be the best darn representation of Jesus that there is. Oftentimes, it's easy for us to look at those who come to church and to make that assumption, to make that correlation. And the fact of the matter is, that isn't fair and it isn't realistic. You see, a couple thousand years ago, Paul was writing a letter to a young man named Titus. A young man who was just stepping into his faith and trying to figure out this dynamic of why, when he walked into a church, did he see people who didn't have it all together? And Paul was directly addressing this tension that was happening right then within his world. This tension to where the local church, a group of Jewish people who had chosen to follow Jesus, were beginning to say, if you didn't grow up as a Jew, you had no right to be a part of the church. If you were a Gentile, your past excluded you from being a part of the church. And they were communicating this and living this out in the way that they were treating people who were trying to come to know Jesus. And in talking to Titus, Paul began to reset his expectations. And this is how he did it. Such people claim they know God, but they deny him by the way they live.
Such people claim they know God, but they deny him by the way they live. You see, it's important as we look at people and relate that to God, to understand that some people go to church as part of their life, but haven't really changed their life to be followers of Jesus with their entire life. But there is still this transformation process that is taking place in their lives and in their hearts that isn't fully complete yet. And we have to begin to understand and make that distinction and begin to see that and reset our expectations. Some people go to church, but they aren't really following Jesus. Secondly, all of us are still growing. All of us are still growing. You see, this act of following Jesus is a journey, not a destination. It is something that for every single one of us, we find ourselves in constant movement, constant opportunities of growth, constant choices in which we choose whether we move forward or whether we slide backwards. Every single one of us, no matter who we are on this path, this journey of growth in our lives. And let's just be honest, that growth process for every single one of us often entails mistakes and learning from those mistakes. You see, this place, Core Community Church, is full of imperfect people. And if you ever walk into a church that tells you any differently, you have my permission to run as fast as you possibly can. Because this place is full of people who don't have it all together, who don't always get it right, who are trying to figure this out every single day, every single week. It's why our mission is leading people one step closer to Jesus Christ every single day, because we're all on this journey. And this is a place that's led by a dude that they allow to walk up here on this stage, buckle in for a second, y'all, who doesn't have it all together either. Who, heaven forbid, doesn't have all the answers and doesn't always get it right. That's who we are. And sometimes it's great, it's actually necessary for us to be vulnerable and transparent about that reality, about who we are and the shortcomings we have and this journey that we are all on to be more like Jesus. Every day of our life and every circumstance of our life. And the writer of Hebrew, he paints this incredible picture of what's taking place for all of us within this local church. And he does it in a little bit of a brutal way. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12, he writes this. For you are like babies who need milk and cannot eat solid food. For someone who lives on milk is still an infant and doesn't know how to do what is right. Solid food is for those who are mature, who through training have the skill to recognize the difference between right and wrong. Here, the writer of Hebrews paints this picture for us to visualize that our spiritual growth is the same process that happens for our physical growth. That we are constantly growing and progressing. And some of us are still at the basics. And all we can digest is just milk. All we can digest is just the simple stuff. And some of us have moved on to baby food, and some of us are trying solid food for the very first time. But we are all in this process of growth along the way. We are still growing. We are still all learning how to do this thing and how to get it right and how to get back up on our feet when we've fallen down and we've messed up and we've hurt other people, and how to apologize and how to approach with sympathy and empathy within our lives and our relationships. We are all growing at this every single day. And then lastly, some of us are mature, and we still mess up. Some of us are mature and we still mess up. It's like Paul writes in Romans chapter 3. For everyone has sinned. All of us fall short of God's glorious standard. All of us fall short of God's glorious standard. You see, sometimes it's hard to make this differentiation, but newsflash, even when you encounter people in your life who have been going to church for 50 years, and they've been Christ followers for as long as they can remember, the fact of the matter is they are still human. And you can count it as certainty that no matter how incredible that person is, you will probably still encounter a moment where they don't react the way they should in the middle of a disagreement. You'll encounter moments where all of us still feel the pressure from that people pleaser bone that exists inside of every single one of us to give in to the pressure of the crowd around us. You'll still see moments where they let their spouse down or they're too hard on their kids. They spend too much time at work. Or the moments where you're out on the golf course and they slice another one into the woods and that thing comes out of their mouth again. That we'll still experience those moments with people because we are all humanity. And yet what we must understand is this. In those moments of our lives in which we encounter those imperfections and those moments of hurt, those are our imperfections, not God's. Those are our imperfections, not God's. And we have to become people, whether we're in a relationship with Jesus and we're rubbing elbows with other Jesus followers every single day and it leads to tension and friction and hurt, that they are humanity, that they are imperfect and they are still growing and they will still mess up and they don't always get it right. But that doesn't have to translate that the way we see human Jesus followers is the same way that we have to see Jesus. That those are two totally different things in our lives. You see, what I recognize about myself is this. It's that oftentimes within my relationships, that when other people mess up and when other people cause hurt, it throws me into disarray. There is hurt and sting that leads to anger and bitterness and skepticism. And yet what I also recognize is this, is that when I mess up, never once has it thrown God into disarray. And the question that it brings to the surface for me is, what gives? How is that possible? That the perfect God of the universe who has never made a mistake is not thrown into disarray when the people who he created with the intention to be good, and we'll touch on that in a second, choose not to be good, choose to go their own way. How could God not possibly be thrown into disarray by that occurrence in all lives and in our journey in a relationship with him? Well, that's because God is incredible. At seeing who we are and what we've come from. God is capable of hanging on to this. In Psalm chapter 103, verse 14, we see him write, "For he knows how weak we are. He remembers we are only dust." The God of the universe is capable of hanging on to. I love you. I am for you. I want incredible things for your life and your purpose. But he also recognizes this reality that without me, without Jesus in your life, we came from dust and we return back to dust. And if it helps you at all, the New American Standard Version writes it in this way. "For even God knew that we were but dust." And if you read that sentence with the correct inflection, it can reset everything and the expectations you have for the person next to you. Because y'all, I'm giving you freedom right now. If the person next to you this morning disappointed you, let you down, or made you mad as you were preparing to come to church or something that happened over the weekend, for you to look at that person and just to say, "You're butt dust. That's all you are. You're butt dust." And it's this reality in all lives that oftentimes we have to reset our expectations for the people around us, reset expectations for the people we're in relationship with and the people that we rub elbows with on a daily basis. And when we adjust expectations of who we all are as humanity and that we're not there yet and we're still growing and we don't always get it right, it allows us to begin to move forward within our lives, within our journeys, within our stories, in the midst of our doubts and uncertainties. In the same way that Jesus' earliest followers learned how to move forward in the midst of their doubts, questions, and uncertainties. Doubts, questions, and uncertainties that were brought on by other people who claimed to be following God. You see, as the church was being founded and growing, there was something that was taking place behind the scenes in an attempt to derail everything God was trying to do, to push them aside and to beat them down. And yet the response we see them take is absolutely incredible. In Acts chapter 13, starting in verse 49, we find this moment. This moment where the local church is growing and moving and God is doing incredible things. And yet right in the middle of all of that, they begin to experience opposition from people who are supposed to be high character, from people who are supposed to be following God. And yet this is their response. Check it out. For the word of the Lord spread through the whole region. But the Jewish leaders incited the God-fearing women of high standing and the leading men of the city. They stirred up persecution against Paul and Barnabas and expelled them from their region. Can you imagine the hurt that was taking place? Like, I thought we were all on mission together. I thought we were all trying to follow God. I thought we were all upstanding moral people. And yet here you are, hurling all of these things that aren't true and all this opposition against us. Can you imagine the doubt and questions and uncertainties that were rising to the surface in that moment? And yet this was their response. So they shook the dust off their feet as a warning to them and went to Iconium. And the disciples were filled with joy and with the Holy Spirit. You see, they set this incredible example that as they were able to step back and just look at humanity and this reality that we've been talking about, if we don't always get it right and we're all broken, they set this example for you and I as we encounter hurt at the hands of humanity as well. That sometimes, y'all, we just need to shake it off. Sometimes we just need to let it go and to continue to move forward. Let me just say this while we're here. If you walked into this place and there's a part of your story, be it in the present or in the past, in which you've been hurt by the church, you've been hurt by this church, you've been hurt by people who say they're Jesus followers, you've been hurt by myself, I don't want to downplay that hurt. It's real. It's relevant. And all the hurt and the emotions that you're feeling, you're probably justified in feeling all of those things. And what I want you to hear first and foremost is this, is that I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you've experienced those things. I'm sorry that you've been let down. And yet the hope that I cling to, the hope that we cling to as an organization full of imperfect people who are still growing and still mess up is this. Is that in light of the fact that we've been hurt by people who claim to be following Jesus, that is not Jesus. It was not his intention. Jesus created us with the intention of us being capable of being good, doing good. But in the same light, he loved us enough to give us the choice, to not force us to be good. And what you know as well as I is this, is that we as humanity don't always make the right choices. There is a certainty that there will come a point in which you will be let down. Most likely that I will let you down. Some of y'all are already considering leaving because I talked about butt dust this morning. I will let you down. We will let you down. And yet in the middle of that hurt and in the middle of that heartbreak, the hope that we cling to is that we have a God who hurts right alongside of you. A God whose heart is broken when your heart is broken. A God who never stops loving you. A God who never stops assigning worth to you. A God who never stops fighting for you. That is who our God is, regardless of how you are treated by humanity. And in order for us to move forward, we have to be capable of making that distinction in the midst of our doubts and questions and uncertainty, that the way in which humanity acts, regardless of if they claim to follow Jesus or not, does not determine who my God is, what he says about me, and how much he loves me. And what I'm about to say, y'all, I'm asking for grace. Because what I'm about to say, I don't want it to come across hurtful. I want it to come across as something that you can find freedom in. You see, if you've ever walked away from your faith in Jesus because of people, maybe your faith was in people when it should have been in Jesus. If you've ever walked away from your faith and a relationship with Jesus because of people, what could be the absolute game changer is to recognize that maybe our faith was put into people who aren't Jesus, and to come back to clinging to just Jesus, to place that line of distinction into our lives and into our doubts and questions and uncertainties. Because when we really look at Jesus, what we find over and over and over again through this word Hippocrates is this, is that Jesus had absolutely no tolerance for a hypocrite. He had no tolerance for a hypocrite. But he has unlimited grace for a sinner in need of forgiveness. And y'all, that reality, that truth is a game changer for all of us. Whether you find yourself interacting with the hypocrite or whether you found yourself as the hypocrite. Because this is what I see about my God. This is what I see about Jesus when he put on flesh and walked on this earth. In the moments of our lives that we find ourselves continually changing the mask and yet so deep within our pride that we can't see it, we have a God who says there's no place for that in my upside down kingdom. There's no place for that within my church. But the moment in which we are capable as the hypocrites of stepping back and recognizing our brokenness, recognizing our shortcomings and our mistakes, the moment that we're able to approach our hypocrisy with a contrite heart is the moment that our God becomes the one with unlimited grace for a sinner in need of forgiveness. It's the moment where everything changes in our story. It's the moment where the way in which through our vulnerability, transparency, because of our shortcomings, because of what we talked about last week, our failures and our insecurities, that God finds most pleasure in using us when we come with a contrite heart, acknowledging our mistakes and that we're still growing and we still mess up and we don't always get it right. That's when we become the church, not the perfect church, the broken church who is capable of consistently pointing back to this is who Jesus is and it's not me. This is how much Jesus loves you and is fighting for you even when I don't get it right. This is the grace that he extends to me when I have messed up, when I've hurt you, when I haven't gotten it right. You see, if you've walked away from Jesus because of broken people, we can find freedom in resetting our expectations and seeing the truth that the way they hurt me wasn't God. It wasn't Jesus. It was them. And God's love hasn't changed for me, and his heart breaks with me. And that is something we never have to question. That kind of love, that kind of grace is something that even in the middle of our hurt, and even when Christians have let us down, that is the kind of God that we never have to doubt. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, oftentimes I find myself stuck in this place where sometimes there's nothing more I can say but thank you. Thank you for being a God who gave his son to put on flesh and blood, to sacrifice himself for my brokenness, for my mess ups, for the times that I don't get it right. But a God who also put on flesh and blood to address the tension, to address the mistakes, to address the ways that we as the church don't always get it right. And yet to provide us grace and help and instruction along the way to continue to move towards you, to continue to grow, to continue to get it right. So God, this morning, my prayer is twofold. And for those of us who have been the hypocrite, God, I pray that today, man, we have the courage to step back with a contrite and humble heart and to see that and to continue to grow into more of your son every single day. But also for those of us who have been hurt by the church, hurt by Christ followers, hurt by me, God, that today would be a day that in the midst of our doubts, questions, and uncertainties, we could step back and draw a realistic line in the sand, reset our expectations of humanity to see that we don't always get it right, to have the courage to see that oftentimes when I fall short, I blame my circumstances. But when somebody else falls short, I blame their character. God, what if we were courageous and mature enough to step back from that and to recognize we've all messed up. We've all made mistakes. We all let people down as humanity. And yet that isn't who you are, and that isn't how you love us. We thank you for who you are. We thank you for how you love us. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.